too. Jesus. All right.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Not This Year. My name is Frank.
I'm Scott.
Paul will be with us shortly. He is en route. He was at the players owners meeting without Rex Ryan and is skedaddling over to his, you know, reporting base in Syracuse. But Scott and I thought we would get the game started for you, the show started for you. Buffalo falls 31-27 to the New York Jets. And that is that, or 37-31, excuse me, to the New York Jets. And is that how the season ends? This reporter says yes. Buffalo had zero ability to stop the Jets offense, absurdly. They could not do anything to stop the New York Jets, and they had flashes of great, I won't say brilliance, but flashes of great against the Jets defense, but nothing sustainable and nothing super great and nothing super helpful, all resulting in a 37-31 loss, 0-2. They share 0-2 with the Dolphins. Then there's the 1-1 Jets, and then at the top is the 2-0 Patriots. Without Tom Brady. So let me do that. So Bills fans will know what that picture means. But Scott, why don't you give me your impressions of this game before we?
Yeah, it's almost hard to analyze the game on its own now.
Right.
Like you can't just kind of. This is on one hand, you know, the story of the game is, yeah, as you put, the defense could not stop the pass game. Certainly, I mean, they did a little bit better job at Forte. I'm sure that was the instructions from Rex was we're going to let Fitzpatrick try and beat us. And sure is. I think this is definitely going to be an NC-17 podcast.
Yeah. By the way, 30 yards, 100 carry, 100 yards, 30 carries, and 3 touchdowns was limiting Matt Forte.
Just to be clear. But sure as shit, Ryan Fitzpatrick threw for 375 yards.
Right.
And pretty much torched the entire secondary. And so the offensive game plan was much more kind of, I don't know what the offensive game plan was, frankly. It was certainly hampered by our inability to block people. The running game kind of never really took off. There was a very inconsistent effort to get Sammy the ball, as Sammy was targeted 5 times, the same number of times that Marquise Goodwin, Greg Salas, and LeSean McCoy were targeted, and 2 targets less than Charles Clay, who was able to put together 27 yards on those 7 targets.
Yeah.
So pretty much an atrocious performance on offense too, other than the 2 fantastic plays, one of which was just a great throw and catch by Tyrod to Marquise, and another kind of just great kind of individual effort by Tyrod. But Tyrod certainly did not give a lot of people confidence with the number of kind of easy throws that he was missing. Anyway, it's so hard to kind of nail this down to one thing, but you do kind of wonder, it wasn't necessarily like the way, it wasn't just the loss, but it was the way that we lost, just kind of not even being like clearly just kind of hanging around in this game by kind of luck and happenstance.
Yeah.
Almost, vice, you know, if we had been in a back and forth, well executed game with no penalties and no turnovers, and Tyrod and LeSean were just going off on people and the defense was making some great plays, but it was the Jets who were the ones who were kind of getting some lucky turnovers and right. A good bounce here or there, then maybe Greg Roman doesn't get fired. And maybe we're not like kind of thinking about this as like, let's get ready for the draft next year. But certainly, under any circumstances, the fact of the matter is that with 0-2 in the AFC, to 2 potential other wild card teams, certainly, right. Because as you previously stated, with New England already leading the division by a game and 2 games over Buffalo with a tiebreaker, with a tiebreaker, then there's really no point thinking about the division. So now we're definitely in the hole, and it's just.
Right, we're in,
it's really hard.
We're in 2 different holes right now, and neither one of them smells very nice. I think that some of the, you know, we'll talk about the firing of Greg Roman, because I know a lot of the snark on Twitter and the leads on articles was talking about, you know, after a 31-point performance, they fire Greg Roman. But that really is sort of misleading, because, you know, Tyrod Taylor is 18 of 30 for 297 yards. 155 of those yards come on 2 passes, which, as you said, one was like an excellent individual effort on him to get away from a sack and throw downfield on what was certainly a busted play. And, you know, you've got to give him credit for that. You give Taylor credit for that. And the other one was sort of like the finally we're going to kind of like throw the ball downfield once. But if you take away those two throws, that's 155 of those 297 yards. So now you're talking about 16 of 28 for, you know, 150-ish yards.
I don't want to put that all on. Now, your point was about Roman, and in that sense, I agree with it.
Right.
I think Tyrod gets more credit for those throws than Roman does, because I think Roman kind of puts those into the game plan as kind of like, I don't know how he decides to game plan, and it doesn't matter anymore. He's not the effing coach anymore. But, you know, Tyrod, I think, still gets credit
for
some of those.
I think it speaks to both things is what I'm trying to say, is because if you take those two awesome plays out and those 14 points and 150 some odd yards out, you're left with Tyrod, you know, you're left with the same offense that we've seen for 18. We're left with the same mistakes that Tyrod Taylor makes over and over, overthrowing easy, stupid fucking footballs and incapable of throwing it, you know, 15, 20 yards down the middle of the Sammy Watkins anywhere. You know, Sammy Watkins wasn't involved in those two plays, at least not directly. I think that points and, you know, almost 300 yards passing with a little grain of salt was true. Points it just turned into Rod being able to do the things that he does. And I think that counts not against them, but it shouldn't count for them as much as maybe some folks would want to.
It certainly can't save them. And I think you actually hit on something that I hadn't thought of before, which is I would say maybe the most damning criticism of Greg Roman is that he was given a guy like Tyrod Taylor in week one last year, and I'm not sure that Tyrod's gotten any better. Like, I don't think they've opened up the playbook. I mean, if they have, it's not clear. It's not clear that Tyrod is making more of those kind of in-between throws that, you know, he was missing last year. You know, he certainly was able to make those fantastic,
right,
you know, game-breaking kind of long-term throws before, but there's definitely no there's no improvement. And I think you can put that on the quarterback's coach, certainly, but I would say you also have to put it on the offensive coordinator. So anyway,
really all 20. I was just going to say some of the early. Am I hiccuping a lot? Can you hear me?
I can hear you a little better now.
Okay, I'll try and.
I'll let you know if it goes out again.
Okay, sorry, listeners. I was going to say that I lost what I was going to say. Never mind. The defense, though, I mean, troubling, certainly big time this week. Looked a lot. I mean, I think that's as bad as the defense has looked, even as compared to all of last year. Right? They had no answer. They had no answer.
This is where I'm going to blame this on Paul for not having this information already at our fingertips. But I'm struggling to think of a worse defensive performance. I mean, the Washington game last year was pretty horrendous.
Yeah.
But that was in a game where everyone just started to stop trying.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
That's the end of the season. It's already over, and everyone was very checked out.
Exactly. Whereas this game was almost, I don't know, again, you don't want to say it's the entire season, but certainly a huge game early on in the season, and one that we were very much in until the very end, frankly.
Right.
You know, yeah, you can say that, you know, when the Jets got their first down with like 4 or 5 minutes left, that was probably about the end of it. But for 55 minutes, we were in that game. And other than Ronald Darby kind of getting a little bit better in the second half and not just completely, you know, changing from burnt toast into just regular toast, it was just an atrocious show. My biggest question on that is, like, was that simply the two worst games in, you know, Stephon Gilmore's and Ronald Darby's history, and they will never play that bad again,
right?
And therefore we can count on this being a fluke and one that cost Greg Roman his job probably, but nonetheless a fluke? Or is this just the entire defense is terrible and this whole team is destroyed? I'm leaning a little more towards the first one, but I would be open to the other argument.
They had a lot of good games last year, and they really just were sort of, they were in a bad place that game. And I don't know if I can't tell you if the Jets just basically schemed to do that. But I know a lot of the stuff was like thrown to the back shoulder, and that's really hard to cover. But they were routinely, yeah, you know, way too far off of these guys and out in space and looked completely lost. Last year, let's see, they gave up 40 to the Patriots in week two. That's hard to really compare them.
That's some of that's on the turnovers.
Right.
There was at least two bad turnovers that got the Bills in bad situations.
They gave up 34 in back-to-back weeks to the Bengals and Jaguars, 24 to the Giants, 30 to the Chiefs, 35 to the Redskins, right, which we already said. So I think there was a couple of clunkers in there.
Paul has joined us. Paul, can you think of a worse defensive performance?
I'm kind of on in that I'm here, but you both sound Zooled, but it's on my end because I have a very bad connection. So I heard Greg Roman, and then it's kind of screwed up. So I will probably be logging off shortly and rejoining you gentlemen, but then I will be glad to give my thoughts.
You sound really good. Scott, do you sound
good? He sounds great to me, and you sound great to me too. So I think it probably is just Paul.
Okay. Well, This has been the Bills Jets game of podcasts so far. Like, not everyone's on the field.
One third of the team shows up 20 minutes late.
Right. Yeah. No. I think Paul.
Don't worry, Paul. We were all late too.
Yeah. Right. So I think there were some shitty performances, but that was up there. It certainly was nothing to write home about. And we should talk about, I think, what is to me the crowning moment of. The crowning moment of Greg Roman's sort of tenure here, which were the three 4th-and-1 calls that were all the exact same call, one of which was the fake a timeout snap. And then they came out in the exact same formation for the third time. And, I mean, right? Like, it was that insane? Like, the first time was cool. Then they came out and they did the exact same formation and tried to draw people off sides 2 minutes after they had just gotten somebody offsides already. And then they came out after the timeout in the formation again, where there is no guesswork involved in what was happening.
No, and that's exactly, no, I think that's definitely something where you have to just kind of, you wonder how that was there a conversation? Was Rex Ryan involved? Was Rex like aware that this was the game plan? That if we get into 3 4th-and-1s, we're going to run the same damn play.
Right.
And we're going to have different outcomes somehow because they won't have learned their lesson by the third time. It was definitely just kind of just bizarre to watch. And I wonder how it could have possibly gone. Like, again, like, I don't know what Rex said where he was involved. And that's the thing. I can only hope that Rex wasn't involved in those play calls where it was like, no, we're not ruining the same thing again, are we? But certainly.
Those timeouts were, especially that one timeout, would have been huge at the end of the game when you're down six and you had, you know, a minute or something left when they were punting the ball. That would have been perfect. So, or helpful anyway. How are we doing, Paul? Oh, Paul looks frozen. He's probably trying to.
He's floating frozen in garbage.
Yeah, Paul has been fired as the offensive coordinator of this podcast. Should we get to 3 stars? We'll do 3 stars.
Should get to 3 stars.
We'll do 3 stars, yeah. And then if Paul has any specific comments he wants them to make on the game, we'll let him, maybe.
I would do 3 terrible performers, but where's the fun in that?
Because like,
there's a lot of terrible performers, and you could go with so many directions. I will start with an honorable mention, though. Honorable mention goes to Preston Brown. You could also give it to Zach Brown, frankly, because they both had pretty good games. Again, Matt Forte did not. Again, he is an old back. He got 30 carries, so he got his 100 yards. Most of the time, that's not going to win you a ball game when you're kind of one of your main weapons is that kind of thing. But at the same time, you know, Matt Forte was able to kind of punch it in on some. I got him the touchdowns, but I think Preston Brown and Zach Brown did a pretty good job in the run defense in the kind of slowing that and making the Jets one dimensional. The problem was, of course, was the Jets were, you know, extra dimensional in that one dimension. Moving on, your 3rd star is going to be Nua, who we may have to start. I hope this is not going to be a recurring theme of wide receivers that you've never heard of torching the Bills. We always have our long list of terrible running backs who have tortured the Bills. Most of them kind of, New England Patriots, for the latter, lack of a better term, Brandon Bolden, or trying to think of some of the other ones. There's been a lot. It's hard to catch them. But Quincy Enunwa had 6 for 92. And again, a third receiver just kind of seemingly could not do anything wrong. He caught all 6 of the passes thrown at him, and that's going to be a theme, I should say. Your second star, Eric Decker, who caught 6 of his 8 targets for 126 yards and 1 touchdown. I've always thought Eric Decker's pretty overrated. I still think he's kind of overrated, but that certainly doesn't change the fact that he also destroyed us on Thursday night. Really had no answers for him. And, he did get that kind of personal foul for taunting, but it was called back, I think, anyway, just for a hold already. But nonetheless, he clearly had plenty to crow about because he was destroying us. And then that obviously only leaves 1 star remaining. And that goes to who else? Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, I think it's safe to say this is probably the best game he's ever played. I mean, I would imagine that he could have been playing a high school team and it would have been playing the 2000 Baltimore Ravens or the 85 Bears. And I think he would have, he was just, sometimes the game slows down, the hoop gets big, you get in the zone, the ball looks like a pumpkin, whatever other sport, and now the goal turns into, becomes, a hockey goal turns into a soccer goal. It just gets easy. And that was it for him. Like, that simply was a great performance. I still don't think he's that good. I don't think, if he's getting him to the playoffs, he's certainly not going to take him far. But still don't think that changes my career opinion of him. But he certainly played his ass off this game. So
did I have connection issues and was late for the podcast? And I'm gone, which is 30 minutes or so. And Scott has named Ryan Fitzpatrick the first star of a football game. Is that what happened here?
We were saying that so far this has been the Bills Jets game of a podcast because it's just been a clusterfuck.
Yes, no, that's it's funny. I have never been in a hotel before either where they don't seem to have, they do have Wi-Fi, but it's like, yeah, we're going to kind of work, we're going to kind of not. So I am now using my work phone as a mobile hotspot, and hopefully I have a job after this. But this does seem to be working. My thoughts on the game, probably everything you guys have already said. It was that was ludicrous. It was Christopher Bridges ludicrous, that game.
Well, we're going to talk about Greg Roman getting fired. And I was actually hoping that we could do the game that from last year that we did where we did the 3 quarterback interviews. And I was hoping we could do a Rex Tyrod Whaley interview for why they should keep their job, as suggested by Scott last week. But first, let's talk about Greg Roman actually getting fired. It initially felt like a sacrificial lamb. Coming off the heels of a 31-point performance. We talked a little bit about during the game that, Scott and I felt like maybe that 31 points was a bit of a paper lion. But there are now conflicting reports about whether – so the Pegulas spoke with the players. I think everyone agrees on that. The offensive players, basically offensive stars. And Ian Rappaport's article, on the one hand, said that Rex was sort of pissed off about that because he wasn't involved in that meeting. And Sal Capaccio's reporting is basically he says he has 2 sources that confirm that Ryan knew about the meeting and it wasn't like that, that basically the Pegulas were confirming Rex's opinion of the offensive coordinator with the offensive players before firing them. And that the firing is really a 18-game performance, not a 2-game performance from this year. Paul, you've not had a chance to really speak very much, so I'd like to start with you. Give us your thoughts on the firing and anything about this controversy or non-controversy about who spoke to who.
Yeah, it's always tough to gauge between a controversy and a non-controversy simply because we're not in the room. We don't know which story to believe. We don't know if it's a member of the media trying to drum up, lo and behold, look at all this craziness. The Bills can't get their act together. That said, I think the very fact that he was fired is indicative of an organization that can't get its act together. Especially after a game, and you mentioned 31 points being a paper lion, might be a paper tiger. It's a paper cat of some sort. Regardless, the There's no way it can be an 18-game thing, though. I would wholly disagree with that, because how many of us were dissatisfied with the offense last year? None of us. You know, they made such great strides in 2015. None of us thought the offense was ideal, but it was the best rushing offense in the NFL. You had a great deep passer in Tyrod, which we still saw bits of on Thursday night, of course. So, you know, that ability is there. That offensive scheme seemed to work well. So after two games, you know, one just gets the opinion that they didn't want to go and fire the defensive coordinator because that's also the head coach, essentially. So, you know, they weren't ready to make that move yet. So it was almost as if to say, you're the sacrificial lamb. We are dissatisfied with the offense's performance in game one. And then for the large part, game two, let's be honest. I don't know what your guys' opinion was on the game, but they had two huge plays and then nothing. You know, that's pretty much what we said.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, with all that in mind, you know, it was an underperformance. Would I have made this move at this time? No. Do I think it's kind of an effort of someone to show some action to try and give that the public the blood that they desire? Absolutely. But I don't necessarily think the firing was justified, even if come the season's end, I think, they should get rid of Greg Roman. I just don't think there's enough evidence at this point to do so.
Scott.
Yeah, no, I think I agree. I mean, I think I was kind of a Greg Roman fan. I was very surprised by the move. I think there certainly were problems with the offense in the first two games. I don't know exactly. It's hard for me to put exactly what those problems are. I think, yeah, I mean, you can say Sammy not being involved is enough, but I think it's confusing to me what the point of how strictly getting the ball to one guy more is going to, I mean, it'll change the offense a little bit, but I don't think it's going to radically, fundamentally change. Like, that alone, I think we sometimes oversimplify things and saying that alone will fix the offense. And I don't think getting the ball to Sammy Moore on Thursday night or Sunday previously was going to suddenly change things. I mean, I think we can't, you know, yes, it's important that Sammy be involved in the game plan more than what he has been, but I think that's kind of an easy kind of way to get out of a serious analysis of what's going on in the offense. And frankly, I don't think I'm prepared entirely to kind of just, again, as Paul said, kind of almost torpedo, you know, 16 games of goodness over two games of badness. And I would say it's 16 games of goodness, like 8 games of goodness and 8 games of badness plus 2 still. Like, that's kind of early, and there have been plenty of people who have had longer ropes than that in the NFL and on this team. So I definitely think it was too early. On the players who's involved and such, I think that's definitely one where I think, and we talked about this a little before the pod started, I think, is that this certainly speaks to a lot of chefs in the kitchen. You know, regardless of what happened, whether it was Rex was involved or he wasn't, or Rex is now trying to cover because he wasn't, or he wasn't involved and didn't care because he had already come to the same conclusion. The fact that even if Rex did agree with Roman's firing, and the Pegulas had already talked about it with them, the fact that the Pegulas then still talked to the offensive players on the team about it makes me think that what if LeSean McCoy or Sammy Watkins says, no, I want to keep Greg Roman. Like, what do the Pegulas do then? Like, do they again count? You can't involve people. Again, no, we don't know exactly what happened in these meetings. Presumably they discussed Roman. You don't know whether this is like, we're informing you that Roman is going to be dismissed and we still love you. But at the same time, the fact that they're just informing them is, it's concerning, because when you give people special access, they kind of expect that they're getting something with that.
Right.
And that's, you know, it's been convoluted enough with exactly where the dividing lines between Whaley and Ryan, the coordinators, the Pegulas are already. This just further muddies the water. And I don't think that, I think that's very concerning just for the way we're running the franchise, frankly.
Right. And when he brought up Sammy, just to jump in quickly, I mean, how much did they think Sammy was going to be part of the offense these two games? He was one-footed Sammy. So, you know, that just makes it seem like he was handcuffed even more. I also want to give an apology. I realized, just to add to ClusterCast, the entire last diatribe I went on, my microphone was flipped up by the top of my head. So now I have flipped that more toward my mouth. So,
we heard. Yeah, no. Thankfully, you were so irate.
Came in fine.
Right. No, that's when rage comes in handy, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. So
that's all I wanted to add on the Roman thing. You know, kind of tough to gauge a guy when one of your best weapons is playing on one foot.
I think there is room to say that And this is, I want to read quickly from Sal Capaccio's article, which listeners can find on WGR550.com. Since I'm reading a little from it, I feel like we should make sure to reference it. Ryan had expressed his own concerns with ownership in these meetings during the offseason. Some of them included the offense not utilizing Tyrod Taylor's strengths more, getting the ball to playmakers like Sammy Watkins, etc. Roman is like a mad scientist, I'm told. This is Sal Capaccio talking. He likes to get in his lab, so to speak, and come up with his own way of attacking an opponent without getting as much input from assistant coaches or players as other coordinators may. Ryan had addressed those concerns and was hoping they would lead to change in 2016, two games in, they had not. And so I think the theory or the argument for saying it's an 18-game decision is there was a lot of issues last year where Greg Roman, what they're saying is Greg Roman wants to run his offense. And it doesn't really matter if everybody on the team thinks we should be altering it to get to Sammy Watkins more or to make Tyrod Taylor more mobile or a better threat or exploiting those things. That was the problem. And that speaks to a little bit of the chef in the kitchen. That speaks to a little bit of what they're saying. If you take, Sal's, I don't think Sal's wrong, but I think Sal has a different relationship with the team than other people do. And it's hard to say exactly with WGR, which gets, pretty much some pretty, not exclusive access, but they get a lot of first rights access to the Bills, what their reporting is going to be like. So I'm not saying I don't believe him, but I'm saying I think it's easier for them to paint the Bills' preferred picture than other sources.
Right. We're not saying we don't believe him. We're saying he's a lying son of a bitch. No. Right. This, if there's a contrarian viewpoint in this, that would be the one I could.
Right. This to me does seem, I think, to speak to Scott's point, a little bit like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. I think that we can all agree the problems with this team are bigger than the offensive coordinator. That said, the deck chairs need to get rearranged. If they're not in the right order, you do got to put them in the right order. So, it's something that maybe they felt they could fix right now, where they could say, okay, I don't really have another quarterback on the roster, even though Tyrod's not making some of the throws we need him to make. And I'm not going to, Rex is in charge of this. And he's like, I really can't do anything. I'm trying to run my defense and I'm not about to cut my defense. So maybe we can get Anthony Lynn in there and he'll sort of basically call the plays that we want him to call. No experience as a play caller, Mr. Lynn, by the
way. It's another terrifying sign. I mean, again, loyalty, nepotism,
right?
Very fine line.
Just to be clear, this entire experience is being painted by the fact that I believe this season is over, and at the end of year, everything will be set on fire. I think this is the end of this regime. It's Vic Carucci's article from the beginning of the year about them getting fired if they don't make the playoffs is going to come true, but not because they didn't make the playoffs, because I think this is a dumpster fire, and I'm not sure how they're going to salvage it.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably a good question to get to now is this team, is the season over? And I think I would say that, yeah, it is. I agree with you. I could see us still winning 9 right. games, even 10 games. Even if we won 10 games somehow, which I don't think we will. I think there's very little chance of winning. We're still behind in all the tiebreakers. And it's just, how do you, it's just very,
right.
You look at the schedule and you see at Seattle, home versus Cincinnati, and then home versus New England with Tom Brady, and you have no idea how they're going to win those three games. They lose all three of those, that's already 5 losses. I mean, they need to go 10-1 the other 11 games. And I have no confidence in their ability to win half of those. So
right, that's not a fair expectation for even a great team, right? Like New England can do that, but that doesn't mean like it's really fair to expect them to do that, let alone Buffalo. So
yeah, that's only when your team is literally, better than the rest of the league, like pre-trading, pre-salary cap days, when you could be the Niners and the Cowboys, and your team was just qualitatively better.
Right.
Yeah, and your team was just qualitatively better than the other teams because you could spend more money and you therefore could accrue more talent. Like in this day and age, there's the ability to be perfect is almost impossible. So anyway, Paul, do you think the season's over?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's not even – I'm not going to hesitate for a second there. There's one thing we universally agreed on going into this first quarter of the season is if the Bills could come out of it 2-2, we would be okay with it. And I think that still holds true. I think the issue is that we see no way in hell in which they win these next two games. We see a lot of ways in hell about a lot of things, but you know, a split of this, maybe I can see them. We'll pull them out one at home at Arizona. That's crazier. Hey, maybe teams have solved Garoppolo after three games. The Bills can pick on him. Could one of the, which the Dolphins
they did. They broke his shoulder. That's how they solved it. Broke his shoulder.
This is. I knew something was going on there. And this is for listeners who are unaware of why I've been crappy on Twitter from Thursday onward, despite all your comments and trying to chime in. I started yesterday in Washington, D.C., this morning in Baltimore, Maryland, flew into Buffalo this afternoon, and I saw someone not named Garoppolo warming up on the sidelines in a 24-0 Patriots game. I'm like, huh, that's pretty interesting right there. So, and now I have breaking news from Frank, apparently Garoppolo's broken his shoulder. So, but going back to the original point, despite that, I think Angela Bassett is the backup or something like that.
Angela Bassett.
Yeah, Angela Bassett. So,
Jimmy Garoppolo and Angela Bassett. I mean, really, that's a lot of Emmys for
That's some 90s firepower right there.
Huge.
So, you know, with that being the case, I don't see them winning both of these. Not a chance in hell. And, you know, with that being said, I think the season is legitimately over. If they win the next two games, then we all get to eat crow, and we will eat it with a smile on our faces. But let's be honest here. They start 1-3 or 0-4. Our titles podcast already has earned its name.
Yeah, we haven't done the very sad maybe next year post. We might have to do that on Sunday. This is pretty bad.
Even if they do, like, win the Patriots, okay. And one game at all with any tiebreaker, it counts as a win. Like, assuming, by the way, Arizona, who put up 40 on Tampa Bay today. I don't know that Garoppolo broke his shoulder. He definitely came out injured with his shoulder. Excuse me. I burped. That's just the kind of podcast this is. I don't know that Garoppolo isn't going to be available to play in 2 weeks. Which, by the way, how insane is it that we are now talking about it's not unfair, but like we're going to have to figure out how to beat Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah.
Undefeated is an NFL starter, so it is a legitimate question now.
We're really hoping that Jimmy Garoppolo isn't playing on 2 weeks from now.
He had 3 touchdowns and almost 300 yards in the first half.
Against a Dolphins team that was supposed to be better on defense.
Yeah, right? Good defensive team, yeah.
And they beat the Cardinals last week. And it's just like, yes, no, it's the season's over, everyone. So you're in the right podcast because there's nothing like this podcast when the Bills season's over.
Yeah, you're going to get so much more of our nonsense because this is just horseshit for the rest of the year.
We're in garbage time already.
You know, we're bringing in the long man, guys. He's just going to – it's the second inning and – we're going to bring in him out of the bullpen.
Oh, is that Yusmeiro Pettit right there?
Yeah, it might be. I don't know. I think this is one of those ones where maybe the starter has to wear it for a while. We're just You know what? We've got 16 years of terrible seasons. I think the bullpen's taxed, and the starter just has to stay out there. And
the bullpen needs it, yeah.
You're going to get your ass beat for a couple of innings and tough shit.
You know, they did a mercy rule on Saturday in college. They did it. It was Clemson and South Carolina State. It was 59-0 in the third quarter, and they just stopped the game.
That's pretty nice of them.
And like they had already pulled, like Clemson had already pulled Deshaun Watson, and they pulled him at halftime, and they're just like, no, it's an in-state thing. Like nobody effing cares. Like,
were they able to put Shaq Lawson in the game in the third quarter? Curious, you know, because he hasn't played an NFL game yet.
Yeah, no, well, he broke his shoulder though. That's the problem.
So not this week, but next week we should probably start thinking about. If this season is over, what do we want to watch? Sorry, this is going to come out wrong. But what are we watching this year? I mean, to the extent that we're like, what's going to be a result we're going to be paying attention to for the rest of the year? And so let's all think about that, listeners as well. And we'll come back next week and we'll say, if the season is over, what kinds of things are we hoping for from the team, the ownership, the coaching staff, whatever. But for now, we talked about New England winning again, Arizona blowing out Tampa Bay. Do we have a this day in Bills history?
Is it ever this day in Bills history? We are going to go in the
how many dead Bills will be involved in this?
I'm sure plenty. I would guess this game happened 56 years ago. So you've got to figure largely 2/3 of the team is dead here. In fact, I wish I'd Googled in advance how many of these people are dead that I'm going to mention.
Let me just Google that. How many dead Bills from – no, that's pretty morbid.
So we're going to go way back, as I mentioned, to September 18th, 1960. Significance of this game, guys? Any guesses on the significance?
56 years ago. Oh, this has got to be the first game in Bills history.
Almost so close. First home game in Bills history.
Okay. Against the New York Titans?
Let's see. It was against the Denver – this is an interesting name. Denver Broncos. I don't know what they're called now. Yes.
Okay.
So this was a packed crowd of nearly over 15,000 fans came to this game. It was the first regular season home game, as mentioned, first home game at all, and it was also the anniversary of their first ever touchdown. It was played in Buffalo's War Memorial Stadium, which, when you guys are in town, I will take you to and then quickly drive away from because that is no longer the best part of town. The first ever touchdown in Bills history was scored by Ray Carlton. He opened the score in the second quarter, a one-yard touchdown rush. Albert Dubenyan then caught a 53-yard pass on the second drive, and then caught, in addition to a 53-yard pass, they also got a 40-yard TD. So that was it was just a great day for Albert Dubenyan overall. But guess what? The Bills found a way to lose. We should have known. In 1960, decades before our birth, we should have known what we were getting into by following this team. The Bills would fall 27-21 on a fourth quarter interception return for a touchdown after having starting quarterback Tommy O'Connell threw five of them.
A Tommy O'Connell football card. I'm going to go look it up right now. I think I have it.
Go for it.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, that's all right. So this loss dropped Buffalo to 0-2 on their inaugural season. Sounds familiar to me, 0-2. Seems like a record we're very familiar with.
Tell me this team made the playoffs. Did they make the playoffs?
They did not make the playoffs, no. It was not a year worth exploring. So we are going to give the trivia question on this one. I mentioned the six interceptions. Four of them were received, if you will, by the same Denver player. He caught four of them. That was a never broken American Football League record. When the AFL folded, this remained the record for most interceptions in a game. Man. Which member of the Denver defensive core was responsible for these four interceptions?
I'd like to quickly just say before I answer the question that the New York Titans was the Bills' first game ever. That was at the Polo Grounds the week before. I just looked it up. So I was close. I had some first thing right. They lost that game 27-3. But the Denver, obviously.
I'll give you a hint. I have Googled him now. He is, in fact, dead.
Oh, good. So let me just go through dead Denver Broncos from the AFL.
Died in 2014, September 8th.
Oh, okay. So maybe somebody mentioned it. Obviously, my extensive AFL Denver knowledge is failing me. So I will say John Elway.
Oh, John, yeah. A mere child of not yet born at that point, yeah.
I believe so.
I think he was probably born at that
point. I'll look it up.
I think he was probably born.
Tommy O'Connell, the quarterback who threw the interceptions, also dead in 2014. So
John Elway was born in 1960, June of 1960.
He was in diapers throwing picks.
Still. 3 months old and still taking it to the best.
Yeah.
No, but that's a good guess, Frank. But actually, it is I'll just get to it. It's the Valravn, the famous Danish mythical beast, that supernatural raven, and it eats the dead on the battlefield. And if it eats the entire heart of a child, it becomes capable of turning into the form of a knight. And I believe that the Valravn had eaten a child's heart that morning, and turned into a knight for that game, which, you know, between that and the supernatural powers, again, really tough for the Bills to get that pass, get those passes through. And again, if you have a supernatural raven and he doesn't come down with four passes every game, I don't, you know, he's probably
got to cut him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Greg Roman type of situation there. I mean, there's no other excuse. So anyway,
yeah, No, that's exactly. He did have a, you know, you forgot his name in human form, though.
That's true, after all that.
So his name would have been Goose Gonsolin. Austin William Goose Gonsolin. TSN All-AFL, 3 years, six-time AFL All-Star, all-time AFL interception leader with 43. Incidentally, that would make more than 9% of them in this game that he had. So a legendary player in Broncos history. I don't know if he's a member of any sort of Broncos Hall of Fame. Let's see. No, he's not. It would be on the Wikipedia page. He was on the inaugural roster. So, yeah, Goose Gonsolin, the human form of whatever Scott said, which I have since forgotten. The
Danish supernatural raven.
Yes, supernatural raven. So, and that was this day, September 18th, 1960, in Bills history.
There you go. Who wants to do some Facebook?
Steven does. Yes, I want to do some Facebook.
Steven definitely does.
I want to do the Facebook.
I want to quickly thank Reza, R-E-Z-A. He sort of sends messages to the Bills inbox, like our maybe next year DM inbox on Facebook.
Yeah. And I tweet with him too, so he's active during the game. Sorry again, I was not more active on Twitter, team. I will be back in my natural habitat next Sunday.
Well, he sent us the upon further review week one of Tyrod Taylor link from week one to make sure we saw that. So we appreciate that, and that's one of the ways you can get a hold of us if you don't want to post directly on our page. But Scott, I think a few people did post on our page.
Steven, longtime commenter, has plenty of thoughts. And he did, you know, he agreed with us on the three big plays, tending to mask how lopsided the game was. You know, I think the two being the pass, and I think he's probably thinking about the third being the
interception fumble return, you know.
Or the interception.
Or the fumble return. So the fumble return and two long touchdown passes.
Exactly. Right. And I don't take it as far as Steven does in terms of saying like 37-3 is more accurate than 37-31, which the final score ended up being, I think, if I recall. Yep. I would say that the actual score of this game was probably more like 37-21 or 37-17.
Right.
Like, yeah, it was still a whooping, but right, it wasn't no like problems. That.
Yeah, I understand his point. You got a one return for a touchdown. You've got two long passes for touchdowns, and you've got one touchdown that happened when the Jets had loosened up defensively. But that's not to say the Bills would not have scored on any of those four occasions had those big plays not happened.
Or so Ryan Fitzpatrick fumbles either one of those two passes on the first drive, and the Bills want to run one of them back. I mean, the breaks go both ways, which is why it's hard to kind of say, well, if you didn't have that one play happen, then, you know, the game would be different. And it's like, well, yeah, of course, but you could say that in any play. So firing Roman seems a little bit premature. Scapegoating, kind of talked about that. Any idea who actually fired Roman? So my understanding is that Rex Ryan is technically in control of the staff. That said, Rex Ryan works for the Pegulas. So if the Pegulas wanted Greg Roman fired, and Rex isn't going to go to the mattresses for him, as in, like, if you want to fire him, you're going to have to fire me first. Then, if short of that, then the Pegulas are probably going to get their way. But there's also no reason to think that when Rex says this was 100% my call, it wasn't. I also refuse to believe that Doug Whaley was not somehow in the loop on any of this, and that Doug Whaley's control of the team is, you know, starts and ends at only at the 53-man roster, which is a big enough responsibility on its own, but certainly one that you can't kind of do in absence of the other phases of the game and phases of building the team. Let's see. We're going to go into Doug and Rex and Tyrod in the minute. Is Bush done? Was he in the game at all? I think, does anyone have something fun to say about Reggie Bush? That's the only thing that's worth saying about him anymore.
Well, the only good news was that nobody had to beat around the bush this game because no,
he wasn't there. That was, around.
Right. No, I hope Bush is done. I hope that with Lynn, he can just say, all right, let's use Mike Gillisley the way he should be used.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah. And that's another thing about Roman, why Gillisley and not Why not Gillis Lee and then instead of half the guys who are taking passes at this point? And then let's see what else we have. Taylor throws such a sweet line ball most of the time, and he can scramble, but he showed nothing else, not through two games. Certainly nothing sort of improvement we were hoping for. He's got no late game heroics, no more than Fitz had. And what's the difference of losing games late, whether it's by Fitzing or by holding to the ball and holding onto the ball and getting sacked? It's a very fair point. I think everyone agrees that Tyrod needs to get better. I think Tyrod would say he needs to get better. The question is, can he?
Right. It's sad because like the plays he missing, the ones he are missing, the ones he can't do, sorry, seem to be the ones that should be the easiest ones to make. Right. It's amazing he can throw the ball as deep and as accurate as he can, but you know, he just does like lose concentration on like these sideline outs or what's going on. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's pretty terrible. And then I think the only other thing that we want to, you know, can jet fuel melt steel beams? We'll save that one for the conspiracy cast, I think.
Yeah, I think we're not. Yeah. The season's not quite that over, James.
Not that quite that over. And then we'll go briefly to the other post, which was things we're going to be doing Sunday this fall other than watching Bills games. So we have Grant, who's sitting in a hot tub. Steven's going to be making a huge back of applesauce. He's going to send us some. We'll see. We'll made with tears. Made with salty, salty tears of Steven crying over the Bills. We're all crying, Steven. We're sympathizing. Brian will be watching good teams play football. I actually was watching a little bit of the World Cup of Hockey yesterday. I thought that was kind of enjoyable. I may watch a little more of that this coming couple weeks. We'll see. Hopefully it lasts another 16 weeks. I don't think it will. There's probably the NHL at some point. Who wants to watch that? Anyway. Yeah, I think that covers it for Facebook. Anything on Twitter, Paul, that we wanted to get to?
Let's see. I'm trying to go TweetDeck now. So we've done the three and outs, right? Did I miss that in my
And we can stall on that. Threes and out? I think it's three.
Three. It's actually both. It's going to be threes and outs.
Threes and outs. That's
threes and outs. Beautiful. I am logging into the TweetDeck right now. I will quickly go through some of the questions that were here. And I apologize in advance if this blows my connection. So this might be the last you hear from me. So wish us luck here. So, you know, Browns are beating the Ravens 20-2. Does this make the Bills look even worse? That was Orlando, I would say. Well, it did at the time. that's all they can say.
Well, yeah, the Ravens come back and win that game.
They came back, yeah.
But, I mean, the Browns still put 20 points on them.
Absolutely.
Without RG3. Without their already replacement quarterback, like some guy that they probably were just hoping was going to be good.
It was one of the McCowns, I think.
Right.
Yep. So I'm actually responding to that live. Plus Browns put 20 points on them. This is fascinating. Listen to Paul respond to comments on Twitter and then actually hit tweet and tweet them right at Orlando.
All right. Well, I
so okay. No, they were okay. Roman is gone, so there's that. Looks like he's a fall guy for X's blunders. We covered that. Thanks, Orlando, for that question. We talked about scapegoatery. That's come up already. Jesmond was up at 5 a.m. to watch the performance in the UK. God bless you, sir. You did a lot more than we did on that one. So, Stephen, covered a lot of the questions here, so we're not going to get into those. But yeah, just thanks to everyone for being on Twitter. I applied you guys as best I could. Again, I'll be much more impressive come Sunday. But hey, I got a good round of questions there. I answered four. I think that's sufficient.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's close enough.
All right.
Yep.
What do you think?
I think we keep it a five a person, and then we do a quick preview at the end. I think that's not too terrible for a jam-packed podcast where a lot of stuff happened this week.
Okay. I'm looking up Arizona Cardinals versus Bill. What the hell is the name of the website?
On the betting website?
Yeah, you know.
Thebettingwebsite.com.
Yeah, that's actually just write that in.
Yeah. So
surprise some type of porn.
You agree that I'm not going to be Doug Whaley in our little in these interviews.
I'll be Doug Whaley then.
Okay. Then Paul, do you want to be Tyrod or Rex?
I'll be Rex because I think that gives some continuity because wasn't Frank Tyrod when he did the original?
Frank was Tyrod, yes. But he's going to be Doug now, so.
All right, yeah. So never mind. I'll still take Rex.
It's all right, yeah.
Don't worry, audience. We'll cut all this out.
Oh, my. No, we won't.
No.
I've got a huge day tomorrow, so.
I know. No,
you're going to get it, guys. All right, well, let's – let's talk to the quarterback first. We have not Tyrod Taylor on the line with us. Thanks for joining us, Tyrod.
Wait, who's Tyrod? Am I Tyrod?
Yeah, you're Tyrod. Wow. Tyrod. Yeah, this was obviously a good idea to keep going on this podcast. This would have been we could have cut our losses, but now we've gone too deep.
It's too deep now. All right. Speaking of going deep, hey guys, what's up? I'm Tyrod.
Hey Tyrod.
Hey Tyrod. Thanks for joining us.
It's a tough loss this week, huh, guys?
Yeah. So your offensive coordinator got fired, and a lot of people have sort of put some of the offensive woes at his feet, but there are other people who think that, you know, maybe you're not quite pulling your weight as much. What do you say to that?
I think Greg Roman's a really smart guy. I think I learned a lot from him. But I think I would also say that while I can do better, I feel like at the same time, I think there were some definite limits on this offense. I think there were certain things that Greg was trying to do that we weren't really equipped to do. And I think that it was, I'm getting a lot of mixed messages from my management and my owners here about what they want me to do. And so I think if Coach Lynn can come in and give me a little more direction and keep me in line with what Rex is thinking and what the Bagulas are thinking, I think that's for a good thing.
What do you think is the one thing you can do better that you aren't doing well right now?
I think I can hit 10-yard passes a lot better than what I'm doing right now, guys. I'll tell you what, when I was at college, my coach told me that throwing the ball 10 yards was pretty useless, that I could throw 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage and 30 yards in front of the line of scrimmage, but that throwing it at 10 yards was like, a pig with antlers. You know, there wasn't a lot of – there was no point in it.
Interesting philosophy down in Virginia Tech there, yeah.
Yeah, it was Coach Beamer, and, he's a great coach. I love Coach Beamer. So needless to say, I still have trouble with those 10-yard passes. But once I get those ironed out, then it's going to be clear sailing, and I'm going to be raking in that money with this off-season extension pretty soon. Looking forward to that.
Paul, do you have any questions for Tyrod Taylor?
Rex Ryan, you mean? Does he have any questions for Tyrod
Taylor? Well, you can be Paul for right now, and Rex Ryan. Okay.
Oh, that's right. Shit. I blew the premise. I screwed up the premise. Oh, and this podcast was going perfectly. Tyrod, I think you've done a good job answering some of those questions, some tongue in cheek, which was even better. I would have to ask, do you plan to revolt? Did you like Greg? And if so, do you plan to revolt in any way on the field?
I plan on wearing a small black ring on my pinky finger to remember Coach Roman. But other than that, no, man, fuck that guy. Like, I was better without him. Even if I've never had an offensive coordinator other than him as a starting quarterback, and trying to have me change systems now is going to be really difficult on me. I'm still supremely confident in my abilities to get this done and get us into the playoffs this year, no doubt.
Excellent. And also on the note of missing Greg Roman, is there any, are you going to miss it all, the fact that you'll have an offensive coordinator who'll put EJ Manuel on the field now and then just remind everyone, oh, right, yeah, Tyrod is actually our best option?
Sorry, I didn't get the question.
The question is, will you miss having an offensive coordinator who likes to put E.J. Manuel on the field?
Oh, who likes putting E.J. on the field. Oh, yeah, the manual, the fourth and manual package. I like playing wide receiver sometimes. So in that sense, it was a good package for me. But in another more accurate sense, I think it was a really dumb package, and it had a good chance of getting me killed. So I think it's probably best that not be part of the plan going forward. Hopefully Coach Lynn won't be calling those too much more.
I'd agree. I think that's it for my questions. And I wonder if this is a thought. Do we want to skip? Well, no, go ahead, Frank. I was going to say maybe we could skip the the Rex portion only because I have no good material right
I,
now.
Well, no, I was going to say that I think that this interview went so swimmingly that maybe we should speak to Rex Ryan and Doug Whaley in the upcoming week since we've got a lot of time. We're going to have a lot of time, I think, for this. Yeah. And maybe
we're not going to want to discuss football. I mean, I joined a half hour late exclusively to discuss as little football as possible.
Right. So I think that we should just move on to the fact that the Arizona Cardinals are currently 5.5-point favorites coming all the way to Buffalo. I can imagine that number going up now.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if they were a full touchdown underdog to the Cardinals. Is there any hope that the Bills will win?
Is there any hope? Yes, I would say there's hope that the Bills will win. Is there a reality?
Right.
Yeah, is there a reality? Probably, you know, very limited. The Arizona does have to travel a long way. There is some, you know, they can use some of the Patriots blueprint and see how well that works because they do have they have more talent than Tampa Bay, which I know is hard to believe at this point. It was Tampa Bay they throttled today, right?
Yeah.
Did I remember that? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, regardless of all that, I mean, Arizona is just a really strong team. And in the end, you're taking a team that's changing an offensive coordinator, has 10 days to get everything straightened out, and now is going to try and beat a Super Bowl favorite potential type team. I can't foresee that happening personally.
Do you have a final score? As long as we're
Where that was the prediction. Okay, yeah, let's do the prediction here. Oh man, this pod, man. Well, it's 8:26 p.m. I'm going to say 26-8 Cardinals. 26, and which is, by the way, a reasonable score. I think I could see the Bills getting a couple field goals in safety. And then some missed extra points, windy day in Buffalo. Yeah. Yeah, 26-8. And I think it's more reasonable than it sounds.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the Bills are not going to win this game. I think the Bills are going to – I think, you know, we've kind of had half the team show off each week sort of, and it's not the same half. Like first week it was mostly the defense who showed up. This Thursday night, it was kind of like half of the offense and half the defense showed up. In this game, I don't think any of them are showing up. I think this is the game that they all just kind of didn't even get off the bus for. I mean, really? I don't know. I think this could be like a 35-7 kind of. You know, they let us score one easy one at the end. But, like, I just don't – based off of what freaking Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker were doing to us on Thursday night with Larry Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer and Arizona's actual good team coming in, I have trouble believing that they won't be able to put up a lot of points pretty quickly. And, you know, we didn't even get to, like, what happened to the pass rush in the last game. Like – Without Darius, clearly there's just no pass rush. It just doesn't exist. So, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to say 35-7.
I am going to disagree. I'm going to say the Cardinals are going to win this game, but I think it's going to be competitive. I think that Ryan doesn't get beat the same way twice very often. And I think that if nothing else, they're going to be a little more prepared for a passing kind of attack. They did that against New England. The second game against New England was a lot better defensively for the Bills. And I think that they're going to come in next week with a sense of pride. I'm thinking the corners had a bad week last week. And it's not to say that they can't get beat again like that. But I think they're not going to look as clueless as they looked last week. I think the offense is also going to have a little something to prove. They're going to have a few extra days with Anthony Lynn really sort of at the helm. I think that they're going to force the issue with guys like LeSean McCoy and Sammy Watkins, and I think it's going to have a limited amount of success. This looks like a 24-17 game to me. I think it's going to look – I don't think it'll be that close. I think it'll be like 24-10, and then the Bills get like the late touchdown to kind of get up into the within a touchdown range. But I think they're going to have a little more fight than that. I think they don't think the season's over, even though we all know it is. You start 0-2, you think you can climb back into it and anything can happen. And the truth is, that's not true.
It's true 12% of the time, right. Not with this team.
Right. I think it's 12% of the time for losing any two games in a row, too. It's not just that you lose.
Oh, no. No, I thought it was 0-2. It was definitely 0-2. Okay. It was 12%.
It's 0-2, but it also doesn't speak to the circumstances of the 0-2. Like, if you had a playoff predictor for that. I'm sure it would be like if you lost two to an AFC conference opponent.
Right. Creighton, if they started their season,
division rivals.
Yeah. At Seattle and then, you know, at the Bengals or something like that, I'd be like, okay, I 0-2, it is what it is.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, this is not that situation. This was two of the games that if we were going to be a playoff team, we would have won. We would have at least won one of them and probably would have won both of them if this is a playoff team. So it's pretty easy to see how this falls apart.
Agreed.
For me.
So
but they're professionals.
Twitter.com, bbillsmny, facebook.com/bbillsmny, bbillsmny@gmail.com, bbillsmny.wordpress.com, on iTunes at Buffalo Bills, maybe next year. Shout out to our newest listener, Craig McHenry.
Yep, followed us on Twitter as well, so thank you.
Yes, Craig. He said he was going to have a protracted discussion with you about Scott Norwood because he's a big fan. He went to JMU as well.
Oh, beautiful.
He's not a Bills fan, but he is an us fan, and so he is excited to learn, I suppose. I don't know why he's subjecting himself to this, but shout out to Craig.
Yeah.
And if you are similarly interested in listening to a sports podcast that you're not interested in, he does Nats Talk on the Go, which Paul would be interested in, but I'm sure no one else in our listening audience would be. But Craig and Joe are nice. And so if you want to just listen to nice people talk about sports, go for it. Do we have anything? I think that's it, right? We hit all the contact info. Bills, Arizona. I mean, look, the one thing everyone has going for them is it never goes the way you want it to go. It never goes the way you think it's going to go. So who knows? They could win this game, and this could be part of the season-long screwing yourself out of a good draft pick, right? Like this game, we'll look back and say, if we didn't win that stupid fucking Cardinals game, we'd be picking third.
But, Deshaun Watson. Yep.
Right.
Oh, well.
Okay. Until next time, thank you so much for listening. This has been ClusterCast early in the year this year. My name is Frank.
Scott.
I'm Paul.
Goodbye, everybody.